education in Alaska is on the upswing thanks to a series of budget increases from the state legislature. What sort of new roles can we expect to see the University of Alaska take? Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. Brian Rogers is our guest. He gets to be Chancellor of the University of Alaska Fairbanks for a while and then walk away from it. What should he be thinking about? Our number toll-free 1-800-478-8255-478-TALK. In Anchorage, a local call at 550-8422. Higher education, the subject on Talk of Alaska, statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
9 out of 10 of Alaska's boating fatalities are adult males. Most drowned following an unexpected fall or capsize into cold water. Cold water can kill the unprepared, regardless of swimming ability. Wearing a life jacket can make the difference between life and death. Make your family's boating memories good ones. Always wear a life jacket when boating Alaska's cold water. This message sponsored by the Alaska Office of Boating Safety.
Many Alaskans may already be acquainted with Brian Rogers. He's got a long history in the state. But the picture that lingers in my mind is Brian standing there kind of like a circus ringmaster. He's not quite wearing the white gloves, but he could be. And he's pointing to a pad of newsprint and writing things down as people talk to him. He's one of those facilitators, and he is the chancellor, the interim chancellor of the University of Alaska Fairbanks. He joins us from our member station, KUAC. Brian, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Good morning, Steve.
You probably are finding your facilitation skills coming in rather handy in this new position, I would think.
Absolutely, yes. You know, the University of Alaska Fairbanks has been part of my life for 40 years, and there are people all over the campus that I know and that I don't know all over the campuses throughout the state, and trying to work with them, trying to help them get their job done, it's a lot of fun.
The one thing that's been happening is you have been in charge of a transition process, which I would think would be right down your alley. How is that going?
It's going quite well. From the time I was appointed interim chancellor until I started as chancellor on July 1, I put together 15 transition teams, about 150 individuals from around the university and from the communities we serve, and asked them for their ideas. What needed to happen at UAF over the next 2 years while I serve as interim chancellor? What needed to happen right away? What could we put in motion to achieve our goals as a university? Well, I'm just amazed at the quality and frankly, the quantity of ideas that came out from that group. 266 separate recommendations from the committees. We've got about 24 of them already implemented, others underway or in planning. Some required further research and follow-up. Some we just won't be able to get to for lack of time or money. But the people from the university, people from the communities we serve, students, really put a lot of work into it, and really my job then is carrying their message forward.
Well, what would you say the message is?
Well, there were three key messages that those recommendations fall into, and I've characterized them as put people first, engage our communities, and take responsible action. The first one's about people, is how do we treat our students better? How do we treat our employees better? For students, that means not sending them from office to office, ping-ponging them around from place to place where they try to get a right answer, giving them a one-stop shop here on the Fairbanks campus, and improving what we're doing electronically for the other campuses around the state. For employees, that's better training for our supervisors. It's a family-friendly task force that I'm appointing today that is going to work on child care issues in Fairbanks, where we've got a real crisis, and on how to be a better family-friendly employer generally.
Well, yeah, I don't want to take you away from the second and third priorities, but I want to probe a little bit on some of that. This people first idea and this community engagement idea, I would think this is difficult because geographically you've got a problem, and also just in terms of what's going on right now, There's a lot of change sweeping through Alaska. It's not just a political change, but large economic and socioeconomic changes are taking place. And Fairbanks, as I understand it, is feeling the increase in fuel cost pretty severely.
Well, certainly Fairbanks is, as are the other communities we serve. You know, it's UAF, not UAF, UF. It is a University of Alaska Fairbanks, and we really serve everyone. We've got cooperative extension agents in Ketchikan and Nome. We've got marine advisory agents in Cordova and Unalaska. We've got research sites all over the state and, frankly, outside the state in places as well. And so we have to think about how we serve our employees and our students throughout the state of Alaska, which adds to the challenge. It also adds to the opportunity. There are things we can do in smaller communities that we can't do in Fairbanks.
You said family-friendly. It's not right now?
I think there's more that we could do to become family-friendly. Certainly that's what the transition team thought. Just in terms of how we accommodate people's work schedules in order to address their family needs, things like parent-teacher conferences. How flexible are we in allowing people to schedule to take care of family needs so that they can be happier in their work and more productive? I know from my work in the private sector, more and more employers are seeking that recognition as being family-friendly because it's a good way to retain good employees.
What do you have in the way of child care facilities right now up on the hill there?
We have one small child care center, Bunnell House, on the Fairbanks campus. Our real crisis, though, is in the closure of one of the private providers in Fairbanks closest to the university.
Oh, boy.
That meant that we've got a real shortage off campus for faculty, staff, and students. And so we're going to work with other employers in Fairbanks to try to help find a way to get that center or another center open that can meet those needs. So we're really not looking at our providing the child care services necessarily. It is ensuring that they are available for faculty, staff, and students.
I know when I talked to Fran Ulmer, Chancellor of University of Alaska Anchorage, one of the things we talked about was the use of the real estate there, that they had essentially almost infinite demand for parking, and they were deliberately choosing to minimize the parking and try and help people explore other commuter options on that very commuter campus. I'm wondering if you have a similar situation there at UAF.
Well, you know, I think every university in the country has a challenge over parking. It's one of the great unifying things at universities is that we all love to hate parking problems. And, you know, we have 4,000 parking spaces at the Fairbanks campus and competition for who parks where and when and what the prices are. So we're doing a couple of things to try to address that. For the summer, we adopted something that UAA has had for a while, which was free parking in certain areas on campus, to encourage the community to come back onto campus. But the biggest change is one that we worked out with the Fairbanks North Star Borough, where we are subsidizing the Fairbanks North Star Borough public transit system so that students can use their student ID cards essentially as a bus pass to get to campus. And to the extent that students, faculty, and staff use that, that frees up parking on the campus itself.
Does that pencil out?
Does it pencil out? No, it's a cost. It's a cost to us. It certainly does for the students. It's a significant benefit with energy costs going up. We were starting to look at an enrollment decline early in the summer. After we instituted this, we've climbed, and we actually have an enrollment increase this fall in our total student credit hours. And I think part of that has been that we recognize that cost impact to students of the commute.
All right. Brian Rogers is our guest. He's interim chancellor of the University of Alaska Fairbanks, and William joins the program from Fairbanks. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, William.
Good morning. Mr. Rogers, I guess the last official act before your predecessor scampered off down to Colorado was to appoint Dave Munson as the head of the Susan Butcher Leadership Institute. That's supposed to teach people to, I guess, give to the community and promote volunteerism and, I guess, get in touch with them, that's given to Mr. Munson, I guess 110 in direct salary and the less rest for flying around and whatnot. And I was curious. I went there to the university and asked if there was a job description. Well, they said they get back to me. It's been a couple of weeks. So I guess they're formulating that and asked if there's a mission statement for this Susan Butcher Leadership Institute. And they said, well, they were formulating that. When they had the news announcement there that Mr. Munson was getting appointed there, they said that this was supposed to teach how to give to the community and promote volunteerism. I was curious. They said they planned for a year and a half for this institute, but they don't have any syllabus or any classes that they're going to teach or anybody. You're an educated man. Maybe you could explain to me how giving Mr. Munson $150,000 a year promotes giving to the community and promotes volunteerism. I'll hang up and listen to your response.
All right, William. Thank you.
Thanks for your question, William. The Susan Butcher Institute, we're pretty excited about the opportunity to really take the kind of leadership that Susan developed and find a way of teaching that leadership to other prospective leaders in Alaska. And this is something beyond the traditional classroom experience, moving into areas like executive education or other leadership education, looking at how to bring people together to work on some of the key problems of the day. I think if you look at something like the Aspen Institute in Colorado, that's a similar type model to what we envision Susan Butcher Institute can be. Building an institute like that takes some time and effort. It takes some fundraising, and a fair bit of David's job is going to be on putting together a financial plan for private support of the institute. And I think it will take a little bit of time for this to percolate and to complete, but I think we'll be pretty excited with what we see about it, just as Susan excited so many of us with her leadership.
So it's just one of these deals where David is expected to try and help raise money for this institute, and it looks like it's still kind of looking for where it's going to fit in.
It is still in the formative stages, as are many initiatives we do. You know, part of our work is to build new opportunities for people to find new ways of teaching, research, and service. This is one that that actually the Board of Regents approved about a year and a half ago, until it had someone to start building the plan and building the leadership. William's right. There wasn't a lot of work done in advance. That's his job.
Brian Rogers is our guest, Interim Chancellor, University of Alaska Fairbanks, and a good portion of the College of Rural Alaska as well. And, Brian, I wanted to ask you about that museum. I'm looking forward to getting a look at that now that it's built. And I know that Aldona Jonatis has left, and there's a search on for a new director of the museum. The list of finalists came out yesterday, and it's so interesting because you've got a couple who are very strong in the natural history and the science side, and then one that's very strong in the arts side. So it's almost a kind of a schizophrenic situation there, isn't it?
Well, you're one step ahead of me. I was in meetings all day yesterday and didn't see the list of finalists. Aldona will be retiring later this year. That is a pretty exciting museum and includes both the natural history and the arts. There aren't a lot of people who are experts in both, so it'll be interesting to see which way that search committee goes in terms of and which way the community goes as people have an opportunity to interview those finalists.
It sounds like you are really serious about this community engagement part of the plan.
Absolutely. And really that goes back to what is a land-grant university. The land-grant university's idea came up in the mid-19th century, and it basically said there's a social compact between states and their public universities. And it is that the states will support the public universities with funding, and the public universities will support the states with their teaching, with their research, that they'll help support the economic development, the community development, the social development of the communities. And I'm really convinced that if we do a better job on our part, that is supporting the development of Alaska in all of its aspects, that the state will do a better job of supporting us financially allowing us to teach more and to do more research of specific Alaska applications. And so engaging the community means getting faculty, staff, and students out into the community. It means working in the schools with teachers. It means finding ways to encourage more kids in the K-12 system to come onto the university and understand what a university means. It means getting out into all of our communities and working on the issues at the local level, being part of the problem-solving groups that every community has, being part of the vision that each community has.
Well, you did get some good marks yesterday from the U.S. Education Department and National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, which did a study of whether or not we were meeting the workforce needs for people in fisheries, biology, marine ecology, and such. And the answer to that question was no. But of all the places that are working on it, you can't do much better than the University of Alaska Fairbanks, apparently, in terms of having good graduate programs and advisors and so forth, although even a number of them are approaching retirement age.
We're really trying to beef up in that area, and thanks to a very sizable grant from the Rasmussen Foundation, have improved our undergraduate fisheries options. And in fact, just yesterday I received word from the Northwest Commission that they've approved the accreditation edition of our fisheries BA degree. That's one that's offered both in Fairbanks and via distance to other campuses. We'll be actively recruiting for that program with the goal of getting ultimately about 25 undergraduate graduates a year graduating, as well as improving our graduate programs in fisheries. The Rasmussen Foundation made a $5 million commitment over 5 years. The state legislature has matched that to really allow us to do way more at the multiple sites of the School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences. So that will include activities in Juneau at the Lena Point at the Fisheries Center there, in Kodiak at the Fisheries Technology Center, research activities in Seward where we've got the Marine Center, and at the Marine Advisory and Sea Grant Program offices all over the state.
Oh, I love it when we break a little news on the show. Brian Rogers is our guest on Talk of Alaska, direct from Fairbanks. We have an email here from Annie, and our email address, by the way, is talk@APRN.org. Especially later in the program, it's sometimes a very convenient way to get your question or comment in if I manage to get a look at it. Annie says, I was lucky enough to attend and graduate from the English BA program at UAF in 2002. Since that time, the news that tuition is increasing for students has worried me greatly. As a student from a middle-class background, I was barely able to afford to attend school, but I took out loans and succeeded, and subsequently chose to stay in Alaska and use my education in public service. However, 6 years later, I am still paying off those same loans, and I worry for students that do not have the advantages I had. I would encourage any efforts to give scholarships to middle and low-income students, as well as tuition caps for students who agree to go into civil service. There's a concept. I thought we had something like that. Please keep education in the humanities an option for all students, she adds. So the tuition increase just went through the Regents, and it wasn't as high, as I understand it, as the president wanted.
Well, actually, the tuition increase is at a lower level than it's been in recent years, and the president did propose it at a lower level, and particularly the lower division instruction at only 4%, upper division at 7% for the next increase. But I think Annie makes a very important point. One of the real worrisome things we're seeing is that the average debt load of students graduating from UAF has been climbing. 22,000 2 years ago, 24,000 a year ago, 28,000 this year, rising rapidly. And I think that the forcing students to incur additional debt is a real problem. Where Alaska really falls in comparison with other states, though, is that we don't provide anywhere near the same level of need-based scholarship opportunities. We're really good on the merit-based, and particularly with the UA Scholars Program providing scholarships to the top 10% of graduating classes. But the need-based is a key issue, and if we look at the lower-income student, often from a family that has not had anyone attend college before, the societal payback for that is huge. Not only do we get one more educated person into the workforce, but lots of studies have shown significant decreases in what needs to be spent on health and human services spending by the state, on the justice system and corrections by the state for those who've attended college. So it's a really good investment for the state, and we've strongly encouraged the legislature to appropriate more money to the Post-Secondary Commission to provide need-based scholarships. We are trying to moderate the tuition increases. Certainly, next year's is lower than it's been, but and our tuition for resident students is below that for resident students in other states. I am worried, though, that our tuition has risen for the essential community college mission in our rural communities and in Anchorage and Fairbanks. It's above the national average for the community college level right now.
Yeah, Brian, you know, I'm remembering when the Commission on Post-Secondary Education used to be a lot more active than it is now in terms of funding scholarships, and I guess it's just another one of those deals where Alaska found itself not being able to afford as much spending as other states. I didn't realize we were behind them, though.
Well, and we used to, in the loan program, forgive loans for students who stayed in Alaska and worked. And loan forgiveness was phased out in the late 1980s. It's been reinstated for certain professions. Rural teaching is one that comes to mind. But that's something we might want to look at. And certainly, as Annie talked about, in terms of addressing the needs for people who want to take the service jobs that are not necessarily high income, are there critical occupations for the state or other services that we would want to say it is worth a state investment if people will stay and work in those jobs to forgive some of the loans that we have outstanding? I think that would be a worthwhile piece of state spending.
Yeah, so it's an issue that needs an advocate in the legislature, preferably well-placed in a committee.
Yes.
All right, let's go to Pam, joins the program from Bethel. Welcome back to Talk of Alaska, Pam.
Good morning. I'm actually a refugee from the rural campuses and now in Anchorage. And my concern is I think there's some deep-seated and profound problems between the university in Fairbanks and its rural campuses. And I think there are about four main examples I can give. I think the overall attitude between the university and rural communities, while there's some good perspectives from people and good relationships, often the university, it seems to think rural people be irrelevant. They think of them as a fiefdom. This is my little spot. I'm not going to let anybody else get in there. And I believe and have some evidence that there's actual contempt for the communities, and this has affected not only the university and us in the communities, but also the state and even internationally. And to give you a couple examples, I think there have been and perhaps still are double standards for academic freedom, in which urban faculty have academic freedom and rural faculty can be fired for speaking out in faculty meetings against abuse of students or, you know, massive over-enrollment in topics in classes. There's also, I think, double standards or no standards for the quality of faculty between the university and main campus and rural campuses, such that we have faculty hired for tenure-track positions which really could not meet those standards if we're based in Fairbanks.
All right, Pam. If I can jump in here, I can hear that you have quite the laundry list here, and I'm thinking whether you have some idea of solutions or some direction to go in terms of dealing with I guess I would say greater accountability in the rural campuses.
Yeah, one thing is that the departments, which seem to be directly with the rural communities, are segregated within the university itself. So you had the Extension Service, and you also had the College of Rural Alaska. And that has been where the basic double standards have started. You also have it, and this is an overall, particularly with the sciences, which is where I'm more familiar, but people just are unaware of who is in rural communities, and they're not even looking into the national membership list of where their registered scientists are. The Association for the Advancement of Science and Sigma Xi. So that there are these members out in rural communities. They need to be brought in even virtually. The clear problem, I think, is this isolation or segregation of programs designed for non-Fairbanks people. And I think that has really been a problem, and that needs to be addressed.
All right, Pam, let's see what we can get out of the chancellor on this one. Thank you very much for your call. Brian Rogers, it sounds like she feels that the mothership is not always in real good touch with what's going on in the rural campuses, and she even speaks of double standards.
I think that any large organization like the university runs the risk of losing touch. That's one reason I'm heading out to each of the four rural campuses over the next 45 days to spend time with faculty, staff, and students, and with the community, for me to listen to them and hear directly, and why I had a separate Q&A session with the faculty and staff following my convocation speech a couple weeks ago. It was another opportunity for me to hear that directly from the people there. It's interesting that the issue of segregation of programs, the creation of the College of Rural and Community Development, the former College of Rural Alaska, and the elevation to vice chancellor level was, in fact, the way that the previous regents, president, and chancellor were trying to highlight the programs and emphasize the programs that serve rural Alaska. We've tried to make sure that there's a single academic process so that it's easy for students in rural locations to obtain degrees beyond the traditional community college degree. And I know when, if we go back 20 years, that's all that was offered in most of the rural areas. It was real exciting to me as a regent to be out in Bethel and see the number of people graduating with baccalaureate degrees in elementary education who were able to teach in rural Alaska. So I think that while there may be people who have the attitudes that Pam discussed, I think there are also a lot of people, both on the Fairbanks campus and in the rural campuses, who are really committed to quality education and committed to the people who themselves are committed to rural Alaska, who aren't going to come into Anchorage or Fairbanks to study, but do want to improve themselves in rural Alaska. We've had quite an emphasis on distance education for access. We're offering more and more courses via distance, again, to try to equalize the access in places that otherwise don't have access to post-secondary education.
Pamela, I guess you would say there's room for improvement.
Oh, I think there's room for improvement in everything we do. I'm sure there's room for improvement in my job as chancellor, too.
Pam?
Brian, if I can just follow up, that there is, I think the problem is within Fairbanks more than it is between Fairbanks and the rural communities. And one example is the extension programs, in which you had it's an annual meeting held nationally between the colleges in Alaska and Hawaii. And it was held in Bethel, and yet extension faculty in Fairbanks were unaware of this meeting. I learned about it from a colleague in Hawaii. And, you know, that shouldn't happen. And I think there are other issues, such as why are we getting people coming to Bethel or to other communities to assist in research and so forth, who are coming from the University of Washington, and that's where people are asking for assistance. When you have people in Alaska and you have people in those communities who can do that work, and a lot of it, I think, is within that Fairbanks area. And simply going out to rural communities on this swing through has always happened. And the topics are always the same, but I don't see anything that's making a real difference in there.
Brian?
Well, I think that the issue of getting the word out about what's going on is a constant problem because of the complexity and diversity of what's going on at the university. And I've been around this university for 40 years, and I'm learning new things all the time since I've been here as chancellor. And it is certainly a challenge to make sure that the right people know about everything that is that's going on. So, you know, certainly extension faculty should have known about the meeting that she mentioned, but those kind of communication challenges exist due to the complexity of the organization.
All right, thank you. It's Talk of Alaska. Brian Rogers, Interim Chancellor, University of Alaska Fairbanks, and the College of Rural and Community Development is our guest as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from
First National Bank Alaska, branches in 18 communities around the state and on the web at fnbalaska.com. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
And by the University of Alaska, home of award-winning faculty, students, and alumni, and offering 500 different degrees and certificates. Find one that's right and do something major. Information at alaska.edu. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska.
The transition plan for the University of Alaska Fairbanks has got three aspects: people first, community engagement, and accountability, and taking risks in decisions. We're talking with Brian Rogers, the interim chancellor, right now. Brian will be there for 2 years. Have you given any thought, Brian, to whether you might want to apply as they conduct this search?
Well, Steve, I'm really focused on doing the best job I can now, and we'll cross that bridge when we come to it.
We're going to get to the big old question of student retention, especially Native student retention, in a moment. First, let me pass on this email observation from Mike in Southeast for any comment you might have, and that is that he notes that the new chancellors, none of them hold PhDs, and none were professors, as I'm sure you're aware. And Mike says he's not even sure there was national searches, and he's wondering if there is a trend toward managers instead of academics in leadership at the university.
Well, clearly, Fran Ulmer does have a terminal degree as a law degree, but she does not have a doctorate, nor do I. I think the one other thing that he didn't mention is all three of us are long-term Alaskans. We've, in fact, known each other for 30 years each, and I think that in my case, this is an interim appointment. The national search will be done, the president promised that to the faculty, that he would do a search next year after the first year of the transition. In fact, he told the faculty at UAA the same thing when he appointed Fran Ulmer. They came back to him after 9 months and said, we'd really like her to be appointed as permanent chancellor. You know, I think the job of chancellor is much more external these days. It's about fundraising in the private sector. It's about work with the legislature on obtaining funding. The academic leadership at the institutions is primarily now at the provost level. That's where you do see the faculty moving up. If we look around the country, it's a mixed bag. Some come up through the faculty ranks to become presidents. Some come from leadership elsewhere. And it really depends on what the specific need of the institution is at the time as to what kind of leadership the institution chooses.
All right. Thank you. We have another call from Bethel. This is Helen. Welcome to Talk of Alaska with Brian Rogers, Helen.
Thank you for taking my call. Mr. Rogers, Lincoln Fido and I started a Big Brothers, Big Sisters program when I had the privilege of attending University of Alaska Fairbanks. I'd like to know if it's still continuing and how you're helping natives from graduating.
There is a...
There's a lot of drop-off.
I'm sorry, I interrupted. Go ahead.
The Big Brothers, Big Sisters program with rural services, we would take in new freshmen from different high schools and orientate them for a week to the university, and it really helped them transition from rural community.
Yes, Rural Student Services is alive and well and doing very well. It is a program, as you've noted, it's really critical to help people make that transition from small community to the larger community of the university. We have a couple of dormitories on campus that are sponsored by regional corporations that are specific to try to work with, get students from their region, often with an elder, to support them. And I think some of our summer bridging programs as well that try to get students onto campus while they're still in high school. The Rural Alaska Honors Institute, 27 years and counting on that, with a phenomenal level of success in attracting and retaining students. The Alaska Summer Research Academy, bringing students onto campus so they understand what's going on. The Upward Bound program, all of these are designed to give them that sort of a pre-knowledge before they start. And then you add to it the rural student services and the housing programs while they're on campus, and our numbers are going up. I don't have them right in front of us, but retention numbers are getting have been on a steady improvement year to year.
Yeah, Helen, I have to say, yeah, go ahead, Helen.
I have one more question.
Yes, go ahead.
How can I encourage my? I have a daughter who's a young mother, and she's 24. And how can I encourage her to have like correspondence course to a college, because she's very smart?
Well, I would encourage her. Get her to the campus in Bethel, where if she's in Bethel, where she can get some advice from the people there. You know, one of the really important things that we find is good advising by faculty and by staff really makes a difference in helping students chart out a course that works for them, whether it's someone who may be working full-time and trying to squeeze in courses in evenings and weekends, or someone who can afford to go part-time or full-time, or one who has employer support. There in Bethel, the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation has done wonders for their staff in making sure that they have the ability to take courses while they're working for the corporation. And we see that kind of support, particularly in the rural Alaska communities.
Thank you very much.
All right, Helen, thank you. Yeah, Brian, I have to say, personally, as a rural person from Pennsylvania, advanced placement was really important for me in my higher education, because I had absolutely no idea what a college campus would be like, and the fact that I was able to go for a couple of weeks in the summertime made all the difference in terms of how I was able to fit in.
It made a huge difference to me, actually, between my junior and senior years of high school, going to a summer engineering program to learn about these fancy new things called computers back there, and actually play with one where you didn't have them around back in the 60s. I really learned a lot, and it opened my eyes, and so I'm very a big booster of RAHI, the Alaska Summer Research Academy, Upward Bound, and the other kinds of programs that we have to try to link to the K-12 system. And in fact, in the UA systems budget request, our top priority for new funding from the legislature this year is in those programs that better connect to the K-12 system.
Brian, we got an email from Lynetta of Open Arms Child Development Center, who is taking up this child care thing. And she says, look, you know, the fact of the matter is for students, you know, faculty is one thing, but students is another thing. There just doesn't seem to be the options, and certainly not the affordable options.
She's absolutely right, and that's been a long-term problem. One of my early jobs in Fairbanks was working at a child care center near the campus. I know the finances and how hard it is to make it in that, even as a nonprofit, let alone in the profit making. And for most students, it is it's a huge challenge to find affordable child care. If we can at least start addressing it for the faculty and staff, we solved part of the problem and opened up more spaces that may ultimately help our students as well.
All right, let's head out to Ketchikan Bay, where Ingrid joins the program. Thanks for your patience, Ingrid. Welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Hi, nice to be here. Yes, I'd like the chancellor, while he's working there as chancellor, to investigate the UAS Center for Distance Education situation. The center itself is really great to the people, the staff there, but there are no courses offered. I'm trying to complete a journalism degree that I started in the lower 48 years ago, and I had most of it done. There's only a few journalism classes offered. Actually, I think it's about two or three. So you cannot complete that degree. I don't think you can complete any degree, bachelor's degree, except I think you did mention education, so that's not fair. So that's the number one problem right there that they need to look into. Number two problem, you pay the distance ed student, the correspondence student, pays the same tuition as far as I'm aware. They get no help from instructors. Instructors don't want to take your calls. You're told not to contact them. All they do is check your papers. And the workload is tremendous. For each chapter, you're given a textbook. The latest one has 20 chapters. Then you're told this is the course of instruction for one course. You have to answer 10 to 20 questions at the end of each chapter. That turns into about a 10-page paper. So with 20 chapters, you're talking about 200 type pages for one course. Plus, then you have a final and a midterm exam. And one course, besides that, it didn't have as many chapters, but you also had to do two projects, two more papers. Then, when you can't get all the work done in a semester, you're threatened with being thrown out. And so you're always on probation, getting incompletes, trying to catch up. So this just isn't an acceptable way of running correspondence. And I'd like to hear the chancellor speak on this and look into it. I don't think the workload should be that much more than the student on campus. There's no reason there couldn't just be a midterm exam and a final and a paper or two, whatever is required for on campus. Plus, these so-called instructors that are nothing more than paper checkers have to be made to do their job.
All right, Ingrid, thank you. I can feel your pain.
And first, I'd like to dispute the no courses offered. There are hundreds of courses offered through the distance statewide distance gateway, and through the Center for Distance Education. I don't know the specifics on journalism, and there are degree programs that are not offered to the same extent. Certainly, I would expect, having been a journalism student and a student newspaper at times, I would expect a lot of writing required for a journalism degree. Some of my best friends are faculty in that program, and I will find out what the case is on the specific journalism. I do think that the workload is different for an online course. The level of faculty interaction is largely through text rather than through voice as it is in the classroom. It is a different experience. I think that the quality of the experience, what we're trying to do is ensure that people who have completed distance education courses come out with the same level of quality education that those do in an in-person course. And that is challenging, certainly for writing. I would expect a lot of writing. For other courses, there is more interaction, certainly with those that are offered by audio, through Blackboard. Other means are different from those that are essentially pure correspondence. And so I will actually, I'm headed over to the CDE offices in a couple of weeks to get an introduction to the people there, and we'll follow up on on Ingrid's concerns about whether faculty are, in fact, interacting with students or not.
Ingrid, thank you so much for your call from Kachemak Bay.
Can I say one more thing?
Sure.
Yes, I just want to point out the journalism classes, you know, you don't just take journalism classes. To get the degree, you have to take other classes that are required, and all the classes require this extensive writing, not just the couple journalism classes that are offered.
All right. Thank you very much. I think we'll take our break right now, Brian, and come back with more Talk of Alaska with Brian Rogers when Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from BP, proud to support public broadcasting in Alaska.
APRN will be providing special coverage of the 50th anniversary of Alaska statehood. For sponsorship information, call 550-8400.
We had an email from Cece who said he's wondering if there's a place in the higher education system for special ed students. He says it's one thing to send these kids that come out of this program in special ed that their grades may not be the greatest, but they've made the effort and they've gotten across the finish line. And all that's left is trade schools that may not really want them, and maybe some of them are more suited to different options in higher education. He asked you to think about that, Chancellor Rogers.
I don't know the answer to that question, and I will think about it.
All right. Thank you. Let's go to Susan, joins the program from Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Susan.
Thank you. Thanks for taking my call. And Chancellor Rogers, I have a question related to the actual teaching of courses either at Fairbanks or Anchorage. I've taken 20 to 30 University of Alaska courses over the years, and I found lots of great teachers and some medium and some teachers who obviously needed some help understanding basics of teaching, like eye contact or a little warmth or walking around a little bit rather than just standing in place the whole time. Just basics, and I'm wondering, what do you have some plans, or are there now training programs for the new instructors to make sure they're just touching base with, you know, the basics of good teaching?
Yes, the Faculty Development Office at UAF does an orientation for all new faculty and then provides continuing professional development for those faculty who seek it. And I'm pleased to hear you've had lots of great instructors. I, too, have had lots of great ones and a few that weren't. There is a process, the student opinion of instruction, that helps us understand which faculty are best at reaching the students. Ultimately, the curriculum and the style of teaching, that is a faculty decision, not an administrative one. They control the educational process, not an administrator, and so we really need to rely in part for the faculty to help each other. The Faculty Development Office here on this campus and it offers faculty development to faculty throughout UAF, I think does a pretty good job for those who select it, and the key is getting those other faculty advised and into the opportunities for professional development.
May I ask one more question?
Go ahead, Susan.
This is, and thank you very much for your response, Chancellor, and that sounds great. I have a special concern in relation to new students. How, in the process you were just talking about, how do we make sure that the people who are teaching those classes, especially for the new students who have worked their way through high school system and are all excited, that their teachers really are, you know, there to kind of grab them onto that higher education ladder and get them excited and interested at those very first steps?
You know, that's one place where I think we do better than most public universities, and part of it is we have a lot more interaction between senior faculty and students at the freshman level. We have a smaller class size on average than the larger public universities outside the state. often there the student's real interaction is only with a graduate assistant who's helping or a teaching assistant. Here, people get time with real faculty, and that there's a qualitative difference there that having the opportunity to interact with faculty creates that opportunity to really grab students. The other thing for UAF, as a research university, we've made a real effort to try to ensure there are undergraduate research opportunities so they get to do real science or really address real community issues at a level that in most places they wouldn't get that opportunity until graduate school. And so I think we've done, we're trying to reach further and further into making that transition easy for students coming into the system, and then holding their interest through their undergraduate experience.
Good. Thank you very much.
All right, Susan, thanks for your call. Oralee sent an email, and she says, look, I am a part-time student. I'm well on my way to my master's. I've been working since spring 2007 and also going to my job, and here I find now that I have to pay an athletics and campus recreation fee that in no way do I have any way of using. I am too busy. What's the justification for this?
The athletics and campus recreation fee is one of a number of fees that have been adopted over the years as essentially the university tried to scramble for how to cover its costs. I've been hearing a lot of feedback about that fee, and particularly the fees like that do impact the part-time student in a way that they get less advantage than the other students. It is one that there was a lot of discussion, as I understand, last year with the student government and the administration, I've certainly been hearing about it. So unfortunately, the alternative is to find some other source of revenue or somewhere to cut in order to eliminate the fee, and I haven't found that yet.
All right. It's not the first time you've heard that one, I could tell. This is one from Angel, who is going to one of the rural development program classes. And she says, I am learning some things I should have been taught in my formative years in order to have a solid foundation. And she is wondering what the university could do to help make sure that the middle school system teaches the basics that are going to be needed rather than having to be remedial about it. And she lists the example of some Native leaders who benefited from education at a lower level to bring them up to that of Willie Hensley, Eben Hobson, and Charlie Edwardson Jr., to name a few, she says.
Well, Angel is exactly right that we are not doing a good enough job in working with the K-12 system to make sure that students are prepared for college, that they have the understanding of what's needed. And let me give an example that is real critical for, and that's in the math area. Our state graduation standards are for 2 years of math in high school. If students don't have 4 years of math in high school, there are whole groups of degree programs that are going to be off limits to them. Essentially, if they're not exercising their mind with mathematics for all 4 years of high school, they're not going to be engineers. They're not going to be in most branches of science. There are a number of technology areas at the associate level as well that become a lot harder if you allow that to lapse. But our standards are 2 years. I really think the standard needs to be 4 years in the high schools to communicate to students that if you want to succeed at the collegiate level or at the whether that's at the associate or baccalaureate level, you need more mathematics. So part of, again, the top priority of the university in our budget this year is how do we connect better to the K-12 system. I know that the State Commissioner of Education is trying to pull together a summit that helps bring university and K-12 system leaders together to work on that very issue. She's absolutely right about the problem.
Yeah, the NOAA study yesterday brought that up as a national problem, that there's just not enough quantitative grounding for people to move into these fishery science college courses.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Let's go to Roger, joins the program from White Mountain. You're on the air, Roger, with Brian Rogers.
Yeah, good morning, Talk Alaska personnel and listening audience. The state has a scholarship program, which they dole out a little over $40,000 to qualified high school students who make the grade when they graduate from high school. My question is, due to higher costs everyone in Alaska is experiencing, is that $40,000 plus going to increase or decrease? I'll hang up and listen to your response. Thank you.
Thank you, Roger.
I don't know the program that Roger's talking about.
I think it's the Alaska Scholars.
And the Alaska Scholars is $11,000 over 4 years, so it's a good bit less. It has not kept up with tuition inflation, and the source of the UA Scholars program is from the University of Alaska Land Grant, primarily actually from harvest of timber in the Gulf Coast area about 15 years back. And because that's the primary source of money, it's essentially a limited pot. We've tried several times over the year to get the state to match it or to increase it. Ideally, the UA Scholars would be a full tuition for 4 years and maybe some of the expenses as well. And until we either have additional significant land revenues or until the state comes up with a match, we're kind of limited to where we are right now.
Push has come to shove. One more question here, Brian Rogers. Reciprocity of grades. Apparently, one of our listeners is having problems with that.
The issue of and I assume that's course transfer.
Yeah.
Transfer between universities. There are the issue is often one of program rather than course. That is, the course will transfer, but it doesn't count to a different degree program at a different university. We've really tried to work on trying to make sure that's well communicated so that people know in advance which courses transfer to which programs. And it may be that she's having a problem with one. If it's within the university system, we should have really minimized coming from outside the university system. Again, it's a faculty decision as to whether the course is equivalent or not. But the kind of problem she's having is really what we're talking about, trying to address with that first theme of the transition, put people first. If she's at UAF, I hope she'll hit the right office that can help her figure out how to best transfer that course credit.
All right. Always fascinating when we do education. Brian Rogers, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you.
Thanks to Jerry Evans at KUAC and Charles Fadullo in the Chancellor's office, Gooseberry Peter at the controls, Emily Butler. It's Len Anderson on the phones today. Duncan Moon is our managing editor, and I'm Steve Heimel. Thank you so much for listening.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by the University of Alaska, the home of award-winning faculty, students, and alumni, and offering 500 different degrees and certificates. Find one that's right and do something major. Information at alaska.edu. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska. APRN would like to thank BP for sponsoring Alaska Morning News and Alaska News Nightly. To learn more about this sponsorship, call 907-550-8400. Views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at aprn.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.